Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Take
it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Mount, here's some ground and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Sean Desay of Triumph MMA. Obi-Wan Kenobi holding it down for all the statistics and everything going on in social media. So if you got questions, jump on Twitter or Facebook at Wow Show. Ask them away. He will either answer them or unleash the Kraken in Sean Desay, who will yell at you for your stupidity of asking said question.
Hey, stupid questions deserve stupid answers, man. Bottom line.
And that is why you are on the show, because yes. You are the guy to point that out for them. We play good cop. You play terrible customer service. I'm just kidding.
Thanks for the support, Sean.
Yes, thank you very much.
What'd I do this time?
Nothing.
I didn't do anything. I've been out of town. How could I have messed up so far?
That's very true. We have a ton of stuff to talk about, including Luke Thomas will join us, because two stories out this week that could have big ramifications to the sport that you and I love in MMA. One, a Canadian group showing that 33% of MMA fights end in traumatic brain injury. We will ask him about that. Plus, the Association of Ringside Physicians have come out and said, hey, this whole starting at 250 pounds and dropping to 145, probably not good for you. We should maybe regulate that a little bit. Yeah. So you're going to see you're going to see perhaps some changes in the sport, and Luke Thomas will come in and we will talk to him about that. We had an event on Fox Sports 1 on Sunday night, a little bit of an experiment by the UFC to move something to Sunday night. Seems to pay dividends. At the peak, it was like 1.3 million
1.25 is what I saw.
So an exciting thing for them, a blip on the radar, so to speak. There's not a lot of empirical evidence to show that they should move everything to Sunday night and totally destroy their business model. But amidst March Madness, it's nice to see that there are enough fans that will either tune away from the game or watch the games they wanted to watch on Saturday and had planned for this, to see Dan Henderson and Mauricio Shogun Hua. And I don't know if it was Luke Thomas or it was Josh or Josh Gross or who it was, but somebody in the midst of that fight kind of, for me anyway, encapsulated exactly what was going on. UFC is a sport in which you can become old in one night. And Dan Henderson looked horrific. Just horrific.
For the first two rounds.
In a bad way, right?
I mean, he looked terrible. You're watching.
He looked old.
He looked old.
Bitter.
He looked slow. He looked out. I mean, he looked out on his feet for the better part of those 10 minutes.
He got dropped, three times?
Yeah,
twice,
and
like
for
that.
The rest of that, I mean, that second round, it didn't even look like he knew what year it was.
No.
You know, he pulls off this upset. I don't want to discount it, upset, but I mean, he was getting owned for two rounds and knocks out Mauricio Shogun Hua.
And he got out-wrestled.
You know, got out-wrestled, but he knocks him out in a devastating fashion, which, of course, did two things. Number one, made all the people at home cheer, because this is the stuff that they're waiting for, and made everybody in Brazil sit on their hands, because that is not what they wanted to see. But they put the mic in front of him afterwards, and it was the first time, I think, in recent memory, I can remember a fighter that you're like, "Ooh, boy, you may or may not be punch drunk. It might be time to move on."
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to see you finish the contract in the UFC. I want to see you to go softly into that dark night and maybe go do something else with your life. I don't know about you two, but it was an amazing way to come back and get a win, but not a guy that I'm anxious to see in the octagon again.
No, and I think if he were to retire, that would be a great way to finish. Because he was hit lose some losing streaks there, right?
He lost three in a row, right?
Yeah.
All last year.
And then he got injured for the John Jones. So taking out Shogun in Brazil, I mean, that writes itself. I would walk away.
Yeah, he won't have TRT anymore either. This is the last time he'll be able to use TRT.
Yeah, so you can imagine what he's going to look like.
Yeah, so at 43 years old without
TRT.
Then his
speech will really be gone then, huh?
Well, and I don't, no disrespect to him, but after being in a battle like that where you're on the wrong end of a beating for 10 minutes at the hands of a serial killer in Mauricio Shogun Hua, I don't expect you to be putting together eloquent pieces of prose from Shakespeare. However, you know, if you want me to get excited, it wasn't, 2 days after the Weidman thing that we'll talk about in a second? You know, 2 days after, he's like, hey, put me in against Lyoto. I'll fight for the championship.
Right.
No, dude. Nobody wants to see that. Yeah. Nobody wants to
see. It's almost like your drunk uncle saying, I'll fight him.
I'll fight that guy. I'll totally get that guy.
So my drunk uncle would win, too.
Yeah. So Dan Henderson debuted in the UFC in 1998 at UFC 17. This guy's a legend. He's a UFC champion, a Strikeforce champion, and
Pride.
A Pride champion. Yep. I mean, two legends going at it. It was a little sad to see the lack of defense in that fight. He essentially was throwing offense and then just eating everything that came at him. But you got to give it to him. Man, he's still got an iron jaw.
He does.
I mean, he was taking bombs and didn't go out.
Yeah, especially when Shogun took his back and Shogun was landing those punches. It kind of reminded me when Dan took Fedor's back and he was landing those punches in Strikeforce. But the difference was Dan kept getting up to his feet and Fedor, you know, obviously got
knocked
out.
Stayed turtle, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. So, like, dude, that dude does has a granite chin. I mean, there's no question about that. But, he took way too much punishment for that fight. I mean, awesome win. I'm sure that's like a comeback. You know, maybe get a fight bonus performance
he
or whatever.
He got both, I believe.
Yeah, extra 100,000.
And you know what, man? To get that off of that card with all those finishes and subs and
that was
spectacular. I mean, from like the prelim, I think it was like what one or two decisions only, right? I mean,
and they were both on the main card.
Yeah, it was amazing fight.
But you see this, Sean, and we've talked about this. You see this when they go to places where the crowd knows everything, and that's no disrespect to American audiences, but we're still growing into this sport. We didn't grow up with Vale Tudo, and we didn't grow up with Pride in Japan and Shuto. And
well, I mean, to back up your statement, when here in the States, when someone gets full mount, everyone's like, "Uh-oh, get ready." But remember back in the day, it's like, okay, well, what, he's sitting on top of the guy.
Yep.
Big deal.
Yeah, you would hear a lot of...
So they're catching up. You're
they're
right.
Certainly catching up. But, catching up. You know, we talk about, you know, Ken talks about when he's here, when you go to Japan, they cheer when you pull guard. You know, because that's the nuance that they cheer for. The Brazilians...
When you shrimp your hips to the left.
Right, yeah! Right. And, you know, and so when you get in those crowds, in Brazil, obviously, they want you to go for the finish. And they will reward you for going to the finish. And yeah, they didn't really cheer for Dan Henderson because they obviously their hometown hero was putting a beating on him. But the Hani Jason to kick off the main card when he
I thought that was bad stoppage.
Really?
Yeah, the guy that wears the Jason mask,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
That dude wasn't out.
No, he looked kind of out to me. But
no way.
Okay, all right.
No way, dude.
My point is, the crowd really liked it.
Sure.
You know?
Well, yeah, but if it was the other way around, the crowd wouldn't have liked it.
That's true.
But honestly, out of all the other stoppages, they were good. But that one was a little bit too early.
And we get to the co-main event, I thought was interesting from a scientific striking position. I've watched it a couple times because I was kind of blown away. CB Dalloway gets backed up against the fence and is literally blindly throwing hooks and ends that fight. And when you see that sort of disparity in striking, it surprises me as a co-main event.
Well, about that striking exchange that they had, it wasn't that he was throwing blindly hooks. The other guy was just missing. I mean,
but if you look,
he was so
desperate. I don't mean blindly. I just mean like CB was just in the pocket, kind of leaned down in one position and throwing continually till he caught him, and that was the end of it.
I don't know why that other guy was like, it looked like he was aiming for the shoulders on purpose or something. And it's not like CB's known for doing like the, you know, a Mayweather shell and rolling his shoulders. That's not his style at all. I mean, in fact, he gets punched in the face a lot. This guy just was nowhere near his chin, and, you know, by default, you got to punch back, and so CB punched back, and there you go. But, I mean, it wasn't – I'm not saying it was a lucky punch by all means, but I don't – that guy
and
threw,
I, and
that,
I
that dude threw like three or four punches, and they were just nowhere near his chin.
And that's,
like,
that's more of what I was saying. I was not saying it was lucky at all, but CB Dalloway clearly knew where he was. You know, that first minute, as you know, Sean, when you train a fighter, that first minute is meant to gauge distance.
Yep.
How close can I get to you and hit you and still get out of the way without being hit, right? And so,
but you don't get that close and miss. I mean, that was confusing.
Right, it was, you know, so Fiera is missing kind of at an embarrassing rate, in my opinion. And it was just interesting to me to see CB, a la Anderson Silva, kind of just lean up against the cage, kind of tilt to the side so that he could just punch his right shoulder and then just hook away until he finally knocked the lights out, and that was the end of it. 40 seconds, and we're gone.
Not a bad paycheck.
No, not a bad paycheck at all. And, you know, probably leads into why you had so many people peaking at $1.3 million on a Sunday night, the best show of the week on Fox Sports 1. That's a huge number. And you do that when you have a card that has knockout after sub after knockout after sub after knockout after sub. And it speaks to what we've been talking about. Can we get this sport collectively to be the brand? And that means, I'm watching UFC. It doesn't matter what names are next to that number. Pay-per-view is going to be withstanding, I think,
sure.
Joe. But I think we're getting to a point now where you can just go UFC, Brazil. Okay, Sunday night, I'm going to watch the UFC.
Yeah, I'm there.
I'm going to train the UFC. You
that's
know?
What you're saying.
And you can do that in these cases where if you look at this card and we go out into the street, they're only going to know Shogun and Henderson.
Yeah.
You know, and certainly to the UFC's credit, they did a great job of marketing that and getting you to buy into the greatest rematch of all time. A bit of hyperbole,
yeah.
But, you know, they got you to buy into it, got you to pay attention, and then they paid it off. You know, they had some great fights, and you can call them bad, you know, that Hani Jason a bad stoppage, but it was a stoppage, and that's what people want to see.
Yeah.
Two dudes go in, one dude goes down, you know, however
it
that happens.
It could have been the complete opposite. It could have been 15 decisions, and it could have been
a long
night.
Oh, boy, and that would have been,
you know?
Yeah, and we've done, obviously, the January.
I was there.
January time. And February, that's pretty much all it was decision after decision after decision. So March being a little bit more sub and TKO friendly is excellent. The other big news that we've got to talk about, Chris Weidman is out of his bout with Lyoto Machida, but they really quickly rescheduled it for 4th of July weekend.
Seems quick to me.
Seems A, quick, and B...
Is he getting the surgery?
On both knees.
Yeah. Oh.
So I don't know if he'll be ready, but if you went on the Underground at all, there was a lot of people screaming conspiracy to move that card to 4th of July weekend, you know, so you've got an American versus a Brazilian, so you can have that...
Well, if he's getting surgery, I mean...
National... Well, of course, yes, but, yeah. Like, you know, is it really... I don't know, you know, that...
How do you fake a surgery?
I don't know how you fake a surgery, but there are certainly stranger things that happen in the world, and I'm not saying he's faking a surgery, but I'm saying to you, that is what I saw on the web, and then on the other side, when you tell me you're getting double knee surgery, I go, really, July? Really? Really?
Maybe he's just getting some things cleaned out of his knee. Like, you know when you get like...
Do you want to call Dominic Cruz? Ask him how that works? Like, really? Both knees? Really?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, maybe you got some leftover, like, what is it, bursitis? You know, maybe he's got some stuff going on. I don't know.
You make him sound like he's like it's plastic surgery. Like, he's just going...
Go in there and clean it up a little bit.
I don't like the shape.
You know when you get your teeth clean, you know?
Yeah, right. Like, yeah. I don't like the shape of my knee when I'm going to kick Lyoto in the head. I just need to have it shaped a little
bit. Yeah, just, you know, make a little
Dana,
point.
Dana, is that cool?
I'm going to point right here.
Just a little month off because I'm going to take, you know...
Yeah, why not? He's a champ.
Do you think he'll be back? Do you think he'll be back in time? I mean,
It's scheduled, right?
Of course it's, yes.
He's young.
Have you learned nothing about these schedules?
He's young. He'll recover super fast. He's healthy. Guys, fighters are like, this is a really bad story. I should probably not even say it, but like, I was getting...
Too late.
All right, I was getting a tattoo once, and when I went back to get, you know, the little final touch-ups, the artist was like, wait a second. Wait, this is not normal. I go, what? He goes, you're like pretty much healed. Like, you're good to go. And I was like, oh, he goes, damn, you must be healthy. And I'm like, well, no, you're just probably used to, like, tattooing, like, potheads and twinkers and alcoholics.
What
you
does
know?
That mean? Well, you're like Wolverine, Sean.
Because I looked at his establishment and I knew where it was located. That's what I'm trying to
gotcha.
Say.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, in general, like, it, with all other injuries that I've had, and other fighters as well. I mean, fighters... They're really good fine-tuned machines, and their recovery is actually a lot. I mean, Anderson Silva.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's an amazing
even though he's
story.
Not as young as Weidman. But, you know, here he is doing mitts now already, you know. And could it be a little bit too early? Is he just playing in the media? Probably. But Weidman's very young. What is he, 28 or something like that?
Yeah.
And, I mean, his recovery will 29. Probably be, yeah, just as good as Wolverine. So I don't see why.
Right. just as good as Wolverine.
Yeah. Hey, he had a little setback in his last movie. I mean, it took him a long time to get, you know, recovered.
Yes, he did.
I don't think that's going to happen to Weidman.
For the record, though, at no point is Chris Weidman fighting the Silver Samurai.
That would be a good fight, though.
All right, when we come back, we've got some other stuff to talk about, some breaking news in the world of the UFC. And, of course, it's not the Way of the Warrior show unless we can do This Week in George St. Pierre. And
yes!
We've got George News, so we'll get to that next. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior. Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, along with Sean Desay from Triumph MMA. Jobi-Wan Kenobi in charge of all the statistics that you hear and everything that happens on social media. You can follow along Twitter and Facebook searching WOW Show, and then you can get to all of our various sundry of Twitter accounts, which is, save for Sean Desay, probably the best way to talk to all of us. I never see Sean on Twitter. In fact, I talk to him all the time at Rebel MMA, but he never responds at all.
We tag you.
You know what? I think I deleted my app, that app on my phone.
This is kind of my point. Is that Twitter app, he has a Twitter account.
I have it. You know what, man? It's just I get it, but I don't get it. Okay. You know
that's
what I mean?
Fine. No, it's fine. That's like, why I was saying, like, go find you on Facebook or Triumph.
Hit me up on Facebook all day, all night.
You're the Facebook guy. We're going to hang out on Twitter.
Don't call me a Facebook whore.
I would never do such a thing. There is actually some big MMA / jiu-jitsu action happening this weekend as the World Series of Fighting 9 is set to happen on NBC, Sports Network, and then Metamoris 3. And if you don't know what Metamoris 3 is, it is the rematch between Eddie Bravo, the man in which Joe Rogan trains near and dear to, and he is taking on Hoyler Gracie for the second time. And why this is a big deal is because when they met the first time, everybody thought that Hoyler Gracie was going to run right over Eddie Bravo, and Eddie Bravo had this system in mind that shunned the gi because he thought the gi was ineffective because most people are not going to put a robe on before they get into a fight. So he developed his version of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Sean and I both trained a little bit in some of Eddie's styles, and he used his styles, the rubber guard, hot dog, all of those things to defeat Hoyler Gracie, and we're set for a rematch on Saturday afternoon, which could be a really big thing. Some other names that you might recognize, Babalu is on that card. He's taking on Dean Lister, which if you like jiu-jitsu, that should be a fantastic match.
Yeah.
And then Vinny Magalhães, he is taking on Keenan Cornelius. You probably don't know Keenan, but Keenan is a dude who always goes for the finish. Vinny, we'll talk to Luke Thomas here in a little bit, but Luke Thomas on his Twitter account earlier this week found a video of Vinny at one of the jiu-jitsu finals taking on Chris Weidman, where he pulls off this fantastic flying armbar. So that if you like jiu-jitsu, a big weekend for that. World Series of Fighting, if you're looking for MMA action, there is some. It seems like Paul Harris is going to make the bout. He is not the tested.
You didn't test.
He tested clean.
Yeah, tested Vinny. Clean. Yeah. So he tested
dirty, then tested clean right away. Was that what happened?
No. He tested dirty a while back, They wanted to make sure that they didn't invest all of this money and bring him out there, and so he had to actually go to Vegas 2 weeks before this thing happened.
Yeah,
and
that random flight.
Exactly. Yushin Okami is on this card. Josh Berkman on this card. So some interesting former UFC guys you can check out if you're looking for MMA action.
Bellator's on this on Friday night too,
and Bellator's on. Yep.
Shulaminko's fighting.
He's our Bellator guy.
Yeah, right. I like how he plugs it in too.
So in the Metamoris fight, Eddie Bravo and Hoyler Gracie. Who do you guys got? It's kind of old school versus new school.
Bravo,
really?
Well, you know, let's talk about this for those people who are listening that don't understand jiu-jitsu tournaments. One of the main reasons why I never did is because kind of like in wrestling, you can do a lot of stalling. You know, if you get ahead on points. And a lot of people will just pull guard, instead of getting taken down. So obviously no points are awarded. And then they can kind of play around. And then they got these advantages. And it gets really confusing after that, to the point where I might actually just start elbowing or punching somebody if I were to do one of those matches.
Sure. Yeah. So, and, you know, to back you up,
you've done a few at Grizzels,
I've done.
Right?
Yeah. And I won my weight class at the Arnolds with an advantage.
Can you explain that?
So essentially what happened is I fought a man for 7 minutes and nothing happened except in the last minute I went to submit him via triangle and he didn't tap.
Because
I attempted to finish the fight, I won via an advantage.
Right.
And that's kind of the knock a point system jiu-jitsu tournament gets. Mm-hmm. In contrast, Metamoris 1 through now 3 is what's called submission only, which means the bouts are set up for 20 minutes and you have to finish the other opponent in order to win the bout. Purists will say that the points make you continue to move because you don't want to be caught in bad positions where you can stall a little bit in the submission game because obviously he needs to finish you. And if he's stronger than you, anyone who's done jiu-jitsu, and I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about the nuance of jiu-jitsu as much as I would like to, but you know the second when we roll what my strengths are and what yours are. You know, if we were to roll right now, obviously I would know that you're going to be stronger than me. I might be faster than you.
And I have to defend your guillotine.
Yeah, and you've got to defend my guillotine because that's
your go-to.
That's my go-to. But in a submission only, all you have to do is defend the guillotine because you know that that's going to be the threat there. And so that's the
and
knock.
And then pass from your guard to a half guard, and then I win.
Yep. And then, yeah, get your points, and then you're done. Yeah. But in this case,
kind of boring, huh?
Yeah. In this case, though, I really think, Sean, that submission only, I think, favors Eddie Bravo and the variables that the
well,
rubber.
It favors a lot of jiu-jitsu practitioners
sure.
that love the fact of, hey, you had to tap to my skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And, going but for the finish the
me,
whole time.
Me personally, yeah. though, I think that Eddie's skill set, I think, will be the determining factor.
You know,
and I could be wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I to answer your question, though, Joe, I'm going for Eddie. Not because I'm anti-Brazilian whatever.
And I'm not that either. I just, really enjoy the way that he yeah. rolls and, you know.
And when you watch their first fight and, you know, and I had the opportunity to roll with Eddie not too long ago, probably like a year back. Yeah, it's he's really, what's the word, unconventional.
Yeah,
big time.
He's definitely evolving, and he's got all these new moves and names for these moves. And then Hoyler is more of the traditionalist with a basic set that he's an expert at, though.
Yep.
You know, he's the way better at this specific move.
Hoyler's smart. He knows that the fundamentals is not going to win this match. He's going to have to get creative.
Yeah, yeah. So Hicks and Gracie and his son, who just won ADCC, they are basic guys too, though. They focus on the basics. They don't go into this
sure.
huge toolbox like,
but,
you know Eddie.
That leans into the very famous Bruce Lee quote that I would fear the man who has practiced a single move 10,000 times than
right?
the man who knows
yeah.
10,000 moves. And so you can have that debate. And for me, if this was Eddie Bravo and Marcelo Garcia.
Ooh.
That's a way different discussion.
I would have to go with Garcia on that one.
But, I mean, a totally different discussion. Yeah, when you put him against Hoyler, though, I think it's going to be a fantastic match. And they both talked about they want it to be the beauty of jiu-jitsu and there be a fair amount of rolling around so you can see the grace and how guys get from one position to another. And then one of them finishes the other guy. I just have, in my mind, given the ways in which Eddie can end these fights, I just think Eddie's kind of got the edge, in my opinion.
To your point, they both said, you know, it's not about winning or losing. They want to put on a display of jiu-jitsu for this, which is super cool. You know, both of these guys are huge names. Eddie's got 45 schools in his 10th Planet jiu-jitsu system.
Now he might need another planet.
Right.
yeah.
He might.
Yeah. 11
so Luke Thomas, who we're talking to later, actually did a great piece on with Eddie Bravo talking about this fight coming up. And Eddie was saying, you know, his jiu-jitsu is jiu-jitsu for MMA. No gi, focusing, you know, straight for the submissions. And that goes a lot to what you were talking about a couple weeks ago. And Eddie essentially said the same thing. You know, guys in MMA aren't going for offensive jiu-jitsu. They're getting really good at defensive jiu-jitsu so they can stand and strike.
Well, I mean, and to go a little bit further with that is because when someone does attempt a sub, their defense is like on point. It's so fast that it's you just don't see that many more attempts. You know, their defense is just
right.
ready to go. So it's not like they're not going for it. They are. It's just they get shut down so fast.
So do you think with Eddie's philosophy in jiu-jitsu that will lead to more offensive jiu-jitsu in the cage?
You know, it's so hard to say what it is because it all comes from a punch. You know, you get
right.
one punch that lands and everything kind of goes, you know, Mike Tyson's famous quote. So it's really, really hard to understand, you know, what you're going for. Now, if someone's got your back and you're going for a Kimura and, you know, he's got double unders and you break his lock and he hits you like from behind, that kind of punch won't necessarily affect you as much as if you were just standing right in front of him or if you were in his half guard or the other way around. That kind of punch is more devastating than if you were turtled down and you're getting hit in the side of the head. You can
sure.
still get knocked out, but you'll probably go for that Kimura because that Kimura, not only will you get the sub, but it's also your exit out, and it will discourage him from punching you harder because he's got to protect his other arm. So it's kind of like which side of the, you know, fence you're trying to get on. You know, it's really hard to say.
But I would say a purist would say that that's the perfect explanation of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
If you get the sub, cool. If not, you used it as a chess piece to get out to do what you wanted to do in the first place, which is punch him in the head.
Right.
And so you've got that Saturday afternoon, which could be very interesting, and we'll kind of see.
We should save that for a whole segment.
Right, exactly.
That's a long conversation.
You know, so that'll happen this weekend, and we'll talk about it next week. No UFC until April 11th, so we get kind
what?
Of...
What?
I know, right?
Why?
We get kind of a respite. that apparently
aren't we having like 4 in 1 night or
that's
something?
That's how long it takes to get from here to Abu Dhabi, which is the next place they're going to be. So apparently by boat, because you know. That's how they're going to go.
Don't take Malaysia Airlines.
Oh, okay. All right. And
On that note,
we'll make a little bit of a transition.
This week in George St. Pierre.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
I'm afraid of you, man. Are you crazy in the head, man?
Let me tell you something, uneducated fool.
This week in George St. Pierre.
And this week in George St. Pierre, it appears he has won his battle against the universe. It has long been his drawn-out battle with the UFC over testing, and that's why it left. The sport, and that's why I needed a break, and that's why the break actually became him just yelling at the UFC for months on end. And so this week, Lorenzo Fertitta, CEO of the UFC, has come out and said, you know what, that boy might be right.
He was on to something.
We should do some random testing. Yeah. Howsoever, George St. Pierre, I don't think that we'll use WADA or VADA, either of the two that you're into. We can create a test that emulates that, but and this is where I think Lorenzo's brilliance kind of shines through. The issue I have, George, with WADA or VADA, pick your poison, is neither one of them have any jurisdiction over what we do. So if Sean comes in clean under a WADA, V-A-D-A test, or a WADA, W-A-D-A test, and he tests positive when we test him, well, what does WADA or VADA care? They passed his test. They just didn't pass ours. So what we're going to do, and we're going to pay for all this as the UFC, we're going to develop a test that emulates what you're looking for, George. And then we're going to randomly distribute it to these fighters in hopes to crack down on all of the things that we have passed in the last 30 days. You know, no TRT, no TUE,
sure.
All of those sorts of things. So I don't know if that's going to speed up George coming back. If George wants to fight Anderson, obviously he's going to have to wait till 2015. That might be perfect for both guys. But it appears George's crusade to change the sport has, in fact, worked.
So is the UFC administrating the test themselves?
No, it's going to be, I'm sure, the Given Athletic Commission, wherever they're competing.
So it'll change depending on where they're
fighting. But Lorenzo said they would work with whatever commission it is to develop tests that emulate the test that George really, really likes. Because there are clearly some things in that test that both Lorenzo and George see value in. They just don't want a non-sanctioning body, WADA or VADA, that have nothing to do with MMA, having anything to do with MMA. And I don't necessarily discredit that.
And those two companies are very, very expensive, too, on top of that. I'm not saying money's an issue,
no, but you know, that's certainly a factor if you're going to fit the bill. Obviously, that's a factor. Yeah. And the other factor is, Sean, there's no legal recourse if they're wrong. You know, we've talked ad nauseum. Even Joe Rogan's been talking about Bigfoot Silva, how this TRT and TUE ban is actually unfair for a guy like that who genuinely needs it.
Right.
And we saw in his, you know, last fight, Right up until the night of the fight, he's totally fine, not fine. And, you know, and so now he has to backpedal and yell at his doctor and sit out of suspension and all of those things. And if he got cleared in a WADA test or a VADA test backstage after the fight, but not cleared in the Nevada Athletic Commission, well, there's no legal recourse for him to say, well, I passed these tests.
Because not all the tests are the same.
Correct.
You know, they're always different. So, I mean, well, with that random drug testing, I mean, are they saying there's going to be a limit now again? Or, I mean, is it still zero tolerance? Because I really like the whole zero tolerance thing.
I hope it's zero tolerance. I mean, this story didn't really go into detail on
how
they were going to do it, what they were going to look for. But I like the zero tolerance, and I think you need to rein that stuff in. It always makes me nervous. Phil Davis is, you know, this story's been bubbling up, and Phil Davis said, you know, only losers take these sort of drugs, which always makes my head hurt a little bit because those seem to be the guys, nothing against Phil, but those seem to be the guys
that get popped
the very
and
next day.
And they get
day.
Popped using like the 1980s steroids, not the new stuff.
Like
you know?
Total horse steroids.
Yeah, it's like, what were you thinking?
So it's always scary when guys like that say stuff like that, but he, you know, he's another guy who's on board. There are a lot of fighters who are on board with this and want to even this whole thing out. We're going to talk to Luke Thomas here next about another thing that I would like to see happen, and that was the Association for Ringside Physicians talking about weight classes and how the weight cutting is insane and maybe needs to be reined in a little bit, and we'll talk to him about what that means for the sport. But essentially, you can have guys that aren't dropping 60 pounds to make that weight class. Guys like Jose Aldo, who drops an insane amount of weight to make 145, would instead have to walk around at a more natural weight in order to get there, i.e. Cormier. He knows that he can't balloon up because it's just too tough on his body to come back down to 205, so he's got to stay at whatever he's staying at, 215, 220, because he knows he can make that. And would that be safer for the sport?
Well, not just the pre you know, like the weight cut, it's also post. I think they should also, you know, look at what the fighters are going to be the next night, too. And they need to, like, put a little cap on that
as well. Yeah, and they're looking at that, and then they're looking at year-long, like, to kind of plot.
Checking
and
in.
And go, whoa, Sean.
Every
you fight,
quarter or
you
something.
You fight at 170. Yeah, yeah. Christmas is coming. You're,
by the way, I got some breaking news. I don't know if it's breaking news. But you know how, I don't know if you guys were ever curious, but remember there was, like, a mystery on Benson Henderson's walking weight? Did you guys ever find out what it was?
We did not.
I did.
What is it?
Oh, this is juicy. You're
fights
right?
at 155.
What's fights at 155 and was a champ for a while at WEC and UFC. A friend of mine, I'll leave his name out.
Sure, yeah.
Trains with him. And he actually, when we were in San Diego and Kevin Lee was with me, we rolled with him. And he was like, man, that guy's wrestling. The only other guy I felt whose wrestling was that strong was Benson Henderson.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And I was like, nice. That's a good compliment. He was like, yeah. But, like, Benson, though, he's, like, 197. I was like, what? I was like, what
holy
do you mean?
Cow. 42 pounds?
And he was like, yeah, dude, that dude's, like, always, like, around 197. And I've seen Benson, like, in interviews and stuff, you know, in between camps.
Yeah, he's a big
guy. Yeah, and he's got chubby cheeks and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, he's, like, all bloated up looking. And it's totally typical.
Or healthy.
Yeah.
All bloated up looking.
You know what I'm saying, man. You know, the bubble, the bobblehead look, you know? And, I mean, having that big hair probably doesn't help either. But, dude, 197.
That's nuts.
All right, now, hold on. I'm about to put Kevin out, dude. Sorry, right. Kev, but we put Kevin on the scale. And my boy was 192.
Oh,
and I was like, and he goes, there's nothing wrong with this scale. And luckily, we had two dumbbells.
There's something wrong with the scale.
Yeah, always, dude. So, luckily, there was two dumbbells right there, a 25er and a 35 dumbbell.
Right.
And I put both of them on, and the dumbbells were only 0.4 pounds off. So barely a half a pound difference. I said, get back on there again, man. It was like 192.6. He goes, dude, no. And I was like, listen, man, you ain't fine until summertime, so you're good. But if this random weight check or whatever you want to call it is happening –
Ouch. Kevin Lee, your mass consumption.
Sorry, Kev.
Your mass consumption of Cadbury cream eggs needs to slow down
a
little bit.
Yeah, do not listen to this episode.
This could, guys, this could step up the level of competition, though, too. If you're not cutting 42 pounds to fight and you're closer to your weight, you know, you may be stronger, faster, smarter, a better martial artist.
Yeah, Frankie Edgar philosophy. You
know
what I mean? For sure. I mean, he did great at 55, and he only did what? 10, 11 pounds.
It was like two sometimes.
Yeah,
like,
but a 10, 11-pound cut for 45,
which he would still,
if they did this limit thing, he would still meet the you know, he'll qualify for 45.
Right. For sure.
So
one other news of note before we get to Luke
Thomas. What weight would you be in, EOB? Sorry.
Right this very second, I'd be at 166, so I could fight at 155.
You're that light?
Yeah.
What?
What? That is like, that's hurtful, man.
No,
what's that
bro.
All about?
I mean, you look good and all that, but I just,
wow.
I thought you would be in a 175 or 180. Really? You're 66.
66, yes. But
what?
Wow. Okay. All right.
All right, man. What about you, Joe?
A $185.
On that note.
All right. Got some competition going on.
Sean looks at my stomach when I after he says
that. Yeah, yeah.
It's the seven cases of KBS you've been drinking.
Well, you drink.
On that note, Tyrone Woodley, Rory McDonald looks like they're inked for UFC 174, so look for that to be the.
That's got to be a title.
Yeah, number one contender for sure.
Oh, for sure. Okay.
A title eliminator, so look for that one. We'll talk to Luke Thomas here next. It is Way of the Warrior. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook. Just search WOW Show. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, along with Joe, who handles all the stats and everything happening, on social media at WOW Show. It is always our pleasure when we get to catch up with Luke Thomas, and this week is one such week. So joining us on the line right now, Luke Thomas, who you can find on Twitter at SBN Luke Thomas. Luke, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
It is always our pleasure because you bring such insight into the sport and have some of the greatest journalism going on with mixed martial arts. It's always awesome to get you, and especially like a week like this week because there's so much going on. I want to start very quickly to talk about Sunday, a bit of an experiment on behalf of the UFC. It appears that it worked out. What were your thoughts of the event, save for the audience? Because 950,000 people seems like a pretty decent number, right?
It is a decent number, I thought, especially going up against March Madness games, an event that, you know, with the schedule that they have, they don't really have a ton of time to promote things, and the they had gone to great lengths in the sense of the angle, calling it the most anticipated rematch in UFC history, which is certainly not the case. But nonetheless, in the end, it may have worked. So the issue, though, is, you know, the problem is we don't have a major sample size to say why it worked. Is it because people know the name Shogun and Henderson? Is it because the UFC audience is super loyal and may not overlap too heavily into basketball? Is it because they love it on Sunday? We don't really know. But I think that there's enough of a reason with the good numbers, and I think it peaked at 1.2 million, 1.3 million, which for Fox Sports 1, that was the number one program all week.
Wow.
There's enough good stuff there to keep trying, but I think it's far too early to declare it a victory.
Now, Luke, would you say in your professional estimation that all things being equal, and if we had all the stats and all the variables to make a definitive call on Sunday night, right, this sort of rating probably wouldn't hold up against football, right?
What do you mean it wouldn't hold up against football?
Like if you tried to do this up against a Sunday night football game that people were into.
Oh, you'd be finished. I mean, that's sort of the other issue here. I mean, it's sort of surprising they went up against basketball. But, you know, I'm sure those numbers were good. I haven't seen them, but I'm sure that whatever March Madness does, especially in the early, you know, 16, 32, 64 round, they do quite well. But, you know, Sunday football is just another thing altogether. You know, NBC, I think, pulls over 20 million routinely for those. So, you know, while there may not necessarily be a dramatic overlap between, you know, the basketball and MMA audiences, I think UFC is smart enough to know they shouldn't go up against the NFL, and you'll note, they also never go up against Mayweather, despite the fact that the UFC and boxing don't necessarily have the most overlapping audience either.
Good insight right there. And a couple other things that you tweeted this week that I thought were, I think, are big pieces of news for the MMA community. The one from this morning, there's a study out from a Canadian group that shows that 33% of all MMA bouts end in traumatic brain injury.
Yeah.
It
was published in the American Journal of Medical Sciences, I believe. The American Journal of Sports Medicine. And it was written by some Canadian folks, and I've reached out to them for some further clarification. Here's the issue with this study, and I'd like to get their response to this, so I don't want to speak on their behalf in the positive
sure,
or negatively.
Yeah.
My only question about it was they watched a bunch of UFC matches over the course of sort of a seven-year span, and they calculated from afar what they determined to be concussive blows, concussive ending, and sort of said if this is what we determined to be a concussion, and then we can therefore extrapolate and say that this is a traumatic brain injury, and we can tally all this up. Certainly, I think that when someone gets knocked down or knocked out, that's not good for your brain. But none of this research comes from actual diagnoses, right? Medical diagnoses. This is all from watching stuff from afar. And it's certainly easy to tally. I mean, this is fighting for sport. People get injured, right?
Right.
So there's certainly enough information to say we need to look into this further. But in declaring that, well, we know for certain that 30% of fighters in UFC events get traumatic brain injury, that's literally just conjecture. They don't actually know that. They're just sort of saying, this looks to be incidences where we see concussive injury. Let's tally them up and report what we find. Alarming, but not, I think the conclusion, as far as I can tell, was a little too far.
Now, Luke, is this something that you'll dig into and maybe kind of expound upon the difference between an observational research and actually talking to doctors and fighters in the aftermath?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, any doctor who works, their weight in gold will tell you that they can't really tell you what's going on without a proper medical diagnosis that they've made. If you go to a doctor, they need a referral. Like, they need somebody who is a medical expert to evaluate these people. And none of that was here. It wasn't like we had one and we haven't even replicated the... Like, so, for example, they did the study. It's one thing to say, can we replicate their results? Their results are going to be easily replicated because it's just sort of number ticking from afar.
Right.
It's not a question of whether they passed medical screenings both before and afterwards. So I've reached out to them. We'll see if they get back to me. I would like to talk to them further about it. Maybe they have some information that I don't know or understand, which I'd be very receptive to. But from what I can tell, that seems to be a pretty glaring omission.
Luke Thomas joining us. You can find him on Twitter at SBN Luke Thomas. Luke, that's your favorite way to communicate via social media, right?
Actually, I hate social media, but I just don't know. I can't get rid of it. So,
but of the ones you hate, you like Twitter the best, right?
Yes. Okay. Of the ones I'm getting to the point now where I had a bunch of Facebook friends I didn't even know, and I'm such a terrible person. I wait until their birthdays, and then I go through whatever birthday it is. I look to see, like, do I know this person? Do I not know this person? And so I get rid of friends on their birthdays.
Happy birthday.
Thing, but what are you going to do?
Luke Thomas joining us. Another story out that, unlike the traumatic brain injury study, this one carries some weight from the Association of Ringside Physicians talking about weight management, specifically in combat sports. You retweeted it. I read it earlier this week. What are your thoughts on their analysis and perhaps their calls to action to change the way the sport works?
I don't think that they're wrong necessarily. If you look at the history of the NCAA, they didn't have very strict for the wrestling programs. They didn't have particularly strict guidelines on weight cutting until, I think, in one calendar year, maybe 10 or so years ago, maybe even further than that. I think 2011, 2001, 2002. Don't hold me to that. But in any event, certainly more than a decade ago, they had three wrestlers die in a year from the ill effects of weight cutting. And wow. So they instituted these policies where basically, without getting too confusing for your listeners, they have a way to measure hydration, or conversely, dehydration. How hydrated are you by measuring, how much water is in your body, essentially, without getting too complicated.
Right, right.
And so, you're still able to cut some weight, obviously, through proper nutrition, get your weight down, but there's a certain limit they can't go beyond it. And it turns out this has been really beneficial for them. They're able to do mat-side weigh-ins because they can measure how hydrated and dehydrated you are. I don't know that athletes, I mean, here's the problem. Like, in the turn of the 20th century, the government took over a role in combat sports, initially boxing, to help regulate the sport. But a lot of the regulations they were putting in place were to clean it up from things that have nothing to do with what we're concerned about now, to make sure there wasn't illegal gambling going on, to make sure a promoter wasn't putting a 200-pound guy against a 100-pound guy.
Right.
Things that government agency can really easily do and do so with pretty strong authority. Now we're getting to the point where we need these government agencies to also be very nimble and flexible as it relates to performance-enhancing drug testing, as it relates to do they have the tools necessary to measure athlete hydration. I just don't know if athletic commissions are really up to the task. It's not a slight on them. You know, your DMV, your local DMV, can't do much more than give you a driver's license and test for that. If you were then asking, you know, for them to police the roads to see if you were drunk and so all these other things,
right,
couldn't do so effectively. You know, I don't know that it could.
Now, let me ask you a more subjective question, though. As somebody who obviously reports on the sport and is clearly a fan of the sport, do you think if they were able to make more stringent weight rules, would that benefit the sport from a viewer standpoint?
In what way?
And like, in a way that you don't have guys dropping 50 pounds down to compete and then ballooning back up, to keep the weight classes a little bit more true to what they're actually looking for.
I think in the end, what you see certainly now with the wrestling in college, I mean, not everyone I realize is a college wrestling fan, but it's pretty safe to say that you can see that you're getting stronger performances from the athletes. I mean, they may win or lose, obviously, but you just don't see guys with very little exception. Derek St. John out of Iowa, I think, stands out as an exception. But you just don't see a lot of guys who cut so much weight that they – excuse me, not Derek St. John, somebody else. But long story short, it's not as much of a problem. You know, I certainly feel like if they could get guys closer to the normal weight class, you'd get better performances. But that's a very, very, very difficult way to get there. And simply passing regulation, you know, is in and of itself salt to nothing. In fact, it may exacerbate the problem.
Luke Thomas joining us. You can follow him on Twitter. I would recommend not Facebook because he deletes you on your birthday. But follow him on Twitter, SBN Luke Thomas. Always a pleasure, my friend. Have a great week.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Take care.
Follow our Twitter account at Wow Show.